at Subaru.com.
This is an editorial statement from the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation Board of Directors. The Equal Rights Amendment has been on the table for states' ratification since 1972. That is close to 50 years. A two-thirds ratification of the states, meaning 38 states, is required for passage. 37 have ratified the ERA, but Florida is not one of them. The amendment reads, quote, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Passage would ensure that all people, regardless of gender, are assured of no discrimination in terms of property, employment, divorce, and other such matters." Let's be proactive. Start contacting your elected Florida representatives and senators to vote yes on the concurrent ERA resolutions to ensure equality for all Americans.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today I'm going to play an interview that I did yesterday with Sea Shepherd founder Captain Paul Watson. I'd like to hear your thoughts about Sea Shepherd and about their tactics for ocean conservation. I'm going to give out the number right now before we listen to the interview. Here's the number to call in, and you can be first in the queue if you call right now. 813-239-9663. You can also email DJ at WMNF.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. And before we go to the Sea Shepherd interview, I want to remind you about something that's happening right now in Tampa. The group behind Amendment 4 is in Tampa right now, and they'll be in St. Petersburg later today. The Florida Rights Restoration Coalition is touring Florida. According to their Facebook event pages, they will focus on breaking down barriers for returning citizens and registering new voters and those who are impacted by the criminal justice system. The Amendment 4 bus tour is in Tampa right now. It's until 2 this afternoon at Bounce Boy Fun Factory. That's at 5008 East 10th Avenue. And it will be in St. Petersburg later today from 5:30 in the evening until 8:30 at the Enoch Davis Center. That's at 1111 18th Avenue South. Well, according to the website of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, the society is an international nonprofit marine wildlife conservation organization. They rely on direct action tactics to stop illegal activities and are often involved in confrontation with other ships when trying to stop, for example, illegal whaling. Their founder, Captain Paul Watson, was in the Tampa Bay area over the weekend for a film screening at Eckerd College, and also for Tampa Bay Veg Fest. I sat down with him at an outdoor cafe in downtown St. Petersburg yesterday, and you're going to hear some street sounds, including some sirens. In this interview, you'll hear Watson say, "This year marks the first time in the history of whaling that no whales will be killed in international waters anywhere." You'll hear why and what Sea Shepherd plans to do about whaling in the territorial waters off Norway, Japan, Iceland, and Denmark. I also found out about the history of Sea Shepherd and what to expect in the future. So if you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, on this interview, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or you can text 813-433-0885. Thanks so much for listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF's Midpoint Monday, and the WMNF app. Here's my interview with Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson.
Well, I founded the organization in 1977 as an anti-poaching organization. So what we do is we go after illegal activities, primarily on the high seas, but in recent years we formed partnerships with numerous governments to work in their territorial waters also.
And why direct action as opposed to other types of ways to stop things that are wrong?
Well, you know, the strength of an ecosystem is diversity, and therefore the strength of any movement is diversity. So there's certainly room for education, legislation, litigation, and direct action, and that's the part that we do. What we do is enforcement. We have all the laws and regulations and treaties we need to protect our oceans, but the problem is there's a lack of a political and economic motivation on the part of governments to uphold those laws. So that's what we're doing. I mean, we'd stop what we're doing tomorrow if the governments would step up to the plate and do their job.
Are there times, though, when the government say, hey, you know, leave it to us and back off?
No, not really. Right now we have partnerships, especially in Africa, doing anti-poaching campaigns. So we're partnered with Liberia, Sao Tome, Cape Verde, Tanzania, Namibia, Gabon, Benin, and Togo. And we're forming new partnerships all the time. What that means is we go into their waters, we're carrying their enforcement people on board. And so that gives us the authority to intervene. We have the resources, they have the authority, and that's working really well. We also have partnerships with Mexico, Costa Rica, Peru, and Ecuador. Our partnership began actually in Ecuador with protecting the Galapagos in 1999, and we've been going for 20 years now on that. But now when we go beyond the 200-mile limits, then that's international waters. Then our authority lies with the United Nations World Charter for Nature, which allows for non-government organizations and individuals to uphold international conservation law, and I've used that quite effectively in court cases that we've been involved in. So we're not really a vigilante group in that respect. I mean, we do operate with the foundation of law. We operate within the boundaries of practicality and the boundaries of the law.
I want to talk about some things in Florida. What should people think about when they think about conservation in Florida, and what has your organization been involved in?
Well, I think what's most important in Florida is protecting marine ecosystems, especially from agricultural runoff. And also you have overfishing is a real problem. I think that on the positive side in Florida is Florida Fish and Wildlife are pretty good at enforcing and laws and that. And same with other states like Alaska, California. They're very good on that way. We don't have to get involved in that. But activists do need to get involved in things that, and probably more on a political, educational level when you're talking about agricultural runoff and everything, because there what we're dealing with is really legal problems, legal corporations, but they're causing problems, and there are laws being broken, but it's a completely different thing when you're working on land as opposed to working on the sea. But really what I try to get people to do is to understand the one basic thing that we're all about, and that is if the ocean dies, we all die. And the ocean is dying. And it's being affected by numerous issues, everything from climate change to acidification to pollution from radiation, from chemicals, from sonar pollution. All of these things are causing massive diminishment in biodiversity. And for instance, since 1950, we've had a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton populations in the world's oceans. Phytoplankton provides 70% of the oxygen in the air we breathe. The phytoplankton goes extinct, we all die. And that's how serious this problem is. So we try to get people to understand that their very survival, no matter where you live, your very survival depends upon having a healthy ocean.
How about sea turtles? I noticed that endangered sea turtles is something that your organization is concerned about. We have several species here in Florida. What can people learn about protecting sea turtles?
We have a campaign called Operation Jairo. It's named after Jairo Mora Sandoval, who is a 26-year-old who was murdered in Costa Rica for protecting turtles. And that campaign goes around the world. So we're here in Florida working on it, Nicaragua, Honduras, Colombia, Ecuador, and Cape Verde. And we have a crew right now in the island of Mayotte. That's a little island between Madagascar and Mozambique, and intervening to stop the poachers from killing the turtles on the beaches. That usually involves night patrols, camping out on the beaches and that. And it's been very, very effective. In Florida, what we concentrate on is trying to stop lights from the hotels and stores and that from keeping from drawing the turtles, the baby turtles, away because they go towards the lights. So we're trying to work with the communities to try and get that light pollution down.
The gender of a turtle, a baby turtle, is often determined in large part by the temperature of the sand that it's incubated in. And as the earth is warming, that certainly could affect sea turtle populations.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, here's a species that's been around really for millions of years and, could disappear in our lifetime. And climate change could be a major factor on that. So it really requires a lot of research and, how we can, maybe there's a way of cooling it down. I don't know, on the beaches. But right now, what we're trying to do is keeping them from their eggs from being taken by poachers. In places like Mayotte, we also have to keep them from being killed directly for their meat, and which is illegal. But there's a lot of illegal activity in that.
Florida has coral reefs and a lot of other places in the world, coral reefs are threatened as well. What is the Sea Shepherd organization doing to protect coral reefs?
One of the things that we have done is working in Kiribati with coral propagation and, you know, teaching people in this is really a project that we're experimenting with right now to see if it works and see if we can teach people to propagate coral in those ecosystems. But coral reefs are certainly massively threatened by acidification and climate change. And we're losing large areas of it, especially like places like the Great Barrier Reef. And, you know, I've been there. I've seen the damage that's being done. But we are making progress, I think, not just Sea Shepherd, but the people involved in the field are making progress in finding ways to propagate coral and to, you know, for 25 years ago, nobody knew how to do that. So at least we have that now.
A couple of times you've mentioned ocean acidification. Why is that a problem? And besides phytoplankton and corals, what other organisms might be impacted?
Well, acidification, well, it impacts shellfish and, you know, it really weakens and deteriorates the shells on that. So that's a major problem. And, of course, it affects habitat for which involves where fish are, where they migrate to, where they're coming from. So it is a major problem. One of the problems that people don't really talk about much, but I find to be one of the most threatening ones, is sonic pollution. That is the noises in the ocean, which disrupt not just whales and dolphins, which we heard of, but also disrupts the activities and behavior of many, many species in the ocean. And the ocean is now a noisy place where, you know, generations ago it was a relatively quiet place. It was noisy in the sense that, you know, you could hear the animals communicating, but now the animals can't communicate because of our interventions.
I think a lot of people understand your organization when it comes to protecting individual animals or groups of animals, but you're also focused on habitat protection. How does your group do that?
Well, I have already mentioned the coral propagation in Kiribati. One of the things that we're working on doing right now is using drones to drop trees into the Caribbean areas for the wetlands and that, and to try and encourage that because they're great buffers against hurricanes. We've been very much involved in the hurricane issues. We started a couple of years ago with Hurricane Maria, and we were the first to Dominica to bring relief supplies and to work with them and to help them. And we've just spent the last 2 months in the Bahamas, rescuing animals and people, bringing relief supplies. And we just finished up that project this week by building a solar power station for Sweetwater Key in one of the upper northern islands. And so we're going to be doing more and more of that because hurricanes are going to become stronger and stronger. And what that does is that it also builds up good relationships with those governments and the people on that, which helps in our other areas, protecting sharks or whatever. So, you know, we want to show that we're very concerned about people and their habitats too, as well as marine species.
Well, that's the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson. He's with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and I interviewed him yesterday in St. Petersburg. And you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, or you're listening to the WMNF app. And we're going to continue with this conversation in just a second, but I did want to let you know that this is Midpoint Monday on 88.5. I'm Sean Canan, and the number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org. Or you can text 813-433-0885. It's 12:19 in the afternoon. We're going to continue with this interview with the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson. And I asked him another question here about hurricane recovery and how Sea Shepherd was involved in the Bahamas and in Dominica in hurricane recovery.
In the Bahamas, what we found was we had to deal with a bureaucracy. We got there. It took us 48 hours to clear customs, bring in relief supplies, and people need it, but, you know, the bureaucracy gets in the way. But we were able to get them to get water, medical supplies, tents, and things to those most hardest hit islands, and then also to do water filtration kits and solar power to bring them so they can restore power. We also rescued a lot of dogs and cats, which were left stranded by that. It's really hard to describe what was there. I mean, you're looking at islands which are so flooded that people were probably looking at their communities being 4 to 5 feet underwater. And, you know, people were hiding in the attics or whatever to try to get. It was devastating. A lot of bodies will never be found because they're just washed out to sea. I think people in Florida should be indebted to the people in the Bahamas because Bahamas basically saved Florida. You know, that storm was stopped right in its tracks by the Bahamas. But it's going to happen here, and we have to be prepared for more stronger and stronger storms that are going to be coming. And it's not just hurricanes here, but it's also tropical storms on the Pacific side and more severe weather conditions and everything. Climate change is a reality. And, you know, it's not a question. People can deny it all they want, but it's not going to change the fact that it's happening.
Defend, Conserve, Protect is the name of a new film. What can people expect if they see this film, and what kind of story does it tell?
That film was narrated by Dan Aykroyd, and that covers our campaigns down in the Southern Ocean to protect whales, which is a very successful campaign. The Japanese have retreated from the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary this year for good. And now for the first time, it's totally protected. In fact, this year marks the first time in the history of whaling that no whales will be killed in international waters anywhere. All whaling now is restricted to the territorial waters of Norway, which is the largest whale-killing nation now, Japan's second. So Norway, Japan, Iceland, and Denmark. And we're working on trying to stop it there. But it's a great achievement this year to see that whaling is no longer taking place in international waters. We saved about 6,500 whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. And that's what that film's about. We had a film that just was aired last night on National Geographic, Sea of Shadows, and that covers our campaign in the Sea of Cortez to protect the highly endangered Vaquita porpoise, which I'm convinced would now be extinct if it wasn't for the last 5 years of our interventions. We've confiscated 950 nets, about 150,000 meters in nets in total, and we're pulling those nets out of the Vaquita refuge as fast as they get them in there, and I think that's the key to the survival of the Vaquita. Is to keep that vigilance on there all through that period of time. So from now in October until June, we're permanently there. We have three ships dedicated to just pulling nets and chasing poachers out of that area. There's another film that's out. It'll be airing on Discovery on December 12th, and that's called Watson by Leslie Chilcott, who made a film about myself. She was the woman who made the film about Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore, and so she's done a wonderful job on that.
A lot of our listeners might not know the story of this porpoise in the Sea of Cortez. Why are there nets there? What is this porpoise harvested for illegally? And what can you tell us about the recovery?
The Vaquita is the most endangered and smallest porpoise in the world. And they're not targeting the Vaquita. They're targeting a fish called the Totoaba, which is about the same size as the Vaquita. So it gets caught. The Vaquita gets caught in the Totoaba nets. But the Totoaba is also an endangered species. And the reason they're going after the Totoaba is the swim bladder of the Totoaba is worth $20,000 a kilo in China. And so with that kind of price on its head, the cartels are involved in it. We're fighting the cartels out there. We've had Molotov cocktails thrown at us. We're shot at all the time. Our drones are shot out of the sky. It's a very, very violent situation. We had not had anybody injured, but on board we have Mexican sailors who Navy people who are there, and they're armed, but we don't carry arms. I've always felt the most powerful weapon is the camera, so we have a lot of those. But the Vaquita porpoise could go extinct because of this incredible demand for Totoaba. So it's the black market between Mexico and China is pretty significant. We're working on the water to stop it. Earth Action League is working on land to try and intervene against the smuggling operations going into China.
I want to talk more about your victory in the Southern Ocean for whaling, if you don't mind. How did you get Japan on board, and what makes you think that they're going to abide by not whaling anymore in the Southern Ocean?
Well, we didn't get them on board at all. What happened is that we cost them over $150 million in losses. We cut down their quotas every year from 30% down to 10%. One time they only got 10% in 2013. And we cost them a lot of money. And so much so that it got to the point they're going to have to replace their factory ship, and they don't have the political support in Japan any longer to do that. That's about a $200 million investment, and they just don't have the support. So we beat them economically on that. Now, I'm not really interfering with them right now for their territorial whaling, because everybody said, well, they started commercial whaling again. Well, they never actually stopped. They just called it scientific research whaling. But they've stopped it in the Southern Ocean. They have a quota in their own waters. But they're no longer getting subsidies from the Japanese government like they were before. And without subsidies, it's not going to survive. So within 4 years, I believe that whaling will be finished in Japan. Now, the reason we're not going to directly intervene with them and we're focusing our attention on Iceland and Norway is because sometimes it's like in that song, you know, I have to know when to hold them, you got to know when to fold them. Well, sometimes you got to back off. And for the Japanese to save face and to, you know, if we get involved, that'll just raise the passions of the whalers and probably motivate the government to put in more subsidies just because we're Westerners that are opposing what they're doing.
Well, that's the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson. We'll hear more from him in just a second. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, and the WMNF app. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. I'm the host, Sean Canaan. And yesterday I interviewed the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's founder, Captain Paul Watson. And we're going to talk a little bit more about whaling in just a second. I just wanted to reiterate what we heard so far. You heard him say that this year marks the first time in the history of whaling that no whales will be killed in international waters anywhere. And so we're going to ask him in just a second. You'll hear his response to where whaling is taking place outside of international waters in the territorial waters of four countries. But I want to give you the phone number again because we have about 7 minutes left in this interview, and right after that we'll take your phone calls. The number is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or you can text 813-433-0885. It's 12:27 in the afternoon and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF.org. Here's more with the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson.
Well, in 1982, the International Whaling Commission ruled that there had a global moratorium on commercial whaling, and it was to take effect in 1986. Well, in 1987, Japan suddenly was no longer a commercial whaling nation. Now they're a research whaling nation. So they went down there to kill whales for so-called scientific research purposes, but they don't want to waste the meat, they said, so they'll sell it anyway. So it's just, everybody knew it was just a bogus sort of thing. And in 2014, they were brought before, Australia and New Zealand brought Japan before the International Court of Justice in The Hague, and they ruled that it was illegal, and they had to stop. So they stopped for 1 year, but then they went back again and defied the International Court in 2016 and 2017, and we went against them again. They took us to court here in the U.S. to try and shut us down, too, so we had a lot of legal fights with them. But we were just relentless. In fact, we call one of our campaigns Operation Relentless, you know, just have to be relentlessly go after them, and ultimately won. I mean, the one thing I'm most proud of this whole is that 6,500 whales were spared the harpoon because of our interventions. Now, there's a lot of talk about how, you know, the Japanese called us terrorists, but I don't see that at all. We were interfering with a grossly illegal act, so how could we be terrorists? They had say things like, well, they threw acid at us. Well, we never did. We threw rotten butter. It's called butyric acid. It's, in fact, Coca-Cola is less acidic than butyric acid. But, the, you know, manipulation of the words and things like that, that you know, and in the media, you know, we always have to expect to be attacked like that. But the fact is Sea Shepherd has never been convicted of a felony anywhere in the world, and that we never caused an injury, we never sustained an injury. And in fact, a few years ago, I was invited to give a talk to the FBI in Quantico, and one of the agents said, well, you know, Sea Shepherd's walking a pretty fine line when it comes to the law. And I said, does it really matter how fine the line is as long as you don't actually cross the line? And they couldn't really disagree with me.
What's the next big campaign that maybe people aren't familiar with, haven't heard about yet, and what will we be doing?
We have 10 ships out on the ocean right now. About almost 200 volunteers are on those ships, and they're doing numerous campaigns. Two of our ships are patrolling the east and west coast of Africa to go after poachers. We've busted 34 poaching vessels this year. Most importantly, that's acting as a deterrent to keep the other poachers out of there. So protecting Africa's coastlines are what we're doing there. One of our vessels is heading up into the Bay of Biscay in this month to go after the French trawler fleets and their bykills of dolphins and try and stop that. We're doing anti-poaching patrols in the Mediterranean and in the Caribbean. And we have one of our ships now going to work in partnership with Indonesia. And so we're moving about all the time. It's really good when we're doing like the African campaigns to move about. So we'll go into one territorial water and everybody leave and then we'll go somewhere else. But sometimes we'll double back and catch them again. addition also to that, we're exposing a lot of the contradictions. For instance, one of the vessels we arrested off Africa is down in the books as a sustainable fishery. You know, and they're selling their product. Well, this is a sustainable fishery. We caught them without a license, fishing in an area they're not supposed to fish. The other thing that we're finding in a lot of these things is this is the last real place where you'll find slavery. And a lot of these ships are really crewed by people who are virtually slaves. They can't get off the ships. They're paid very little money. One ship that we boarded off Africa, going through the crew, the documentation, we found a passport, but where's the crew member? And, of course, we brought him in because, you know, people get killed all the time. They just throw them overboard, but they neglected to throw the passport overboard with them. And so, and we've been able to stop bribery, for instance, another vessel. Yeah, one vessel that we crewed on, we went on board with the boarding officer. The captain just smiled. He went down below, came up there, and started counting $8,000 out in American dollars. And the boarding officer looked at us. We looked at him, and he had no choice. He arrested him for bribery. But, you know, it's very, you know, it's really tempting for these rangers and these naval people. I mean, they're making maybe $150 a month, you know, working for the government. Somebody offers them $8,000. That's a real temptation on that. And so it's good that we're there to try and keep that from happening. I mean, I don't blame them. I can see, you know, see where they're coming from in that respect. But the rangers, and not only the Marine Rangers, but the rangers on land in Africa do a great job, and the fatalities that they suffer, you know, from being killed by poachers are, you never hear about them, really. And that's from it. You know, you don't really hear about the dangers involved. In the last 10 years, over 1,000 people have been murdered for working on environmental conservation issues in Brazil, in Costa Rica, in Africa, all over. And you don't really hear about it that much.
How can that get solved? You know, there's a financial incentive for some people in very poor countries to do things that are illegal and to protect that with violence. What's the solution?
Well, I think that we have to have laws and we have to strictly enforce those laws. And the problem is it hasn't been done, really. So the government's really got to get up there and do it. And working with the governments that we're working with, we're getting them motivated to understand that, you know, there's going to be a lot of losses. Say you're an African country and you allow this to go on. Well, the money that is being made from exploiting wildlife is nothing compared to the money they're going to be losing if in tourism and with ecological collapse and all these other things. So they have to look at the bigger picture that people may have to go without for other future generations to survive. You know, when everybody says, well, you know, we have to do this because we're poor. Well, that's not a justification for robbing banks. It's not a justification for trafficking in drugs. So why should it be a justification for trafficking in wildlife?
All through this conversation, we've talked about climate change. It's come up in virtually every type of thing that we've talked about. What's the solution there? What should people be doing to control climate change?
By getting involved. 2 weeks ago, I spoke with Greta Thunberg about this, and it just shows you just what one person can do. I mean, it's a 16-year-old girl, and she's getting that message all over the world. I think that the strength of this movement for addressing climate change is coming from young people. You know, school strikes and everything, and they're talking to their parents, and you know that's puts pressure on politicians, and they're not pulling any punches. When Greta Thunberg met with Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada, you know, he looked on it as a photo opportunity. Hey, look what I'm doing, and she said, "You're not doing anything." You know, you wasn't expecting that.
Well, that was my interview with the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson. He's with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, one of the founders 40 years ago. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, and the WMNF app. I'm Sean Canaan, and this is Midpoint Monday, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. What do you think about Sea Shepherd and about their tactics for ocean conservation? The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email DJ at WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. We've got a couple of texts during the interview. Dre asks a question that I don't know the answer to. He says, it's unfortunate I can't ask the captain this, but I must try and fish for thoughts. Is there any research or source for examination of effects of the Gulf Stream pipeline on sea life? And there are pipelines that go across the Gulf of Mexico to Florida. There are some that come to Tampa Bay. They originate from places like Texas and Louisiana. And Dre, I don't know the answer. I apologize for that, but maybe one of our listeners knows more about it. I also have a text that came in from 727. If you send a text, why don't you sign your first name, if you don't mind? And 727 asks, what is the annual cost of Japan's whaling fleet to deploy to the Southern Ocean to hunt their quota? And the New York Times wrote about this. There was an environmental group, IFAW, and that group estimated that Japan spends $400 million a year in tax money to send its fleet to the Southern Ocean to hunt for whales. But again, I want to point out that this is things that have happened in the past. You heard Captain Paul Watson from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society saying there that this year marks the first time in the history of whaling that no whales will be killed in international waters anywhere. So that's just something to point out there. 813-239-9663. We're going to go back to the phone lines, and we're also going to hear from President Trump after this music break. It is Veterans Day, and so we're going to hear a little bit about what President Trump is saying today on Veterans Day. But first, we'll have a quick music break. We'll be right back. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Please stay with us. Machine Gun Music from Band of Gypsies featuring Jimi Hendrix. And just a reminder that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:38 in the afternoon, and you're listening to Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. We just heard an interview with the Sea Shepherd's Captain Paul Watson, and pretty soon we're going to hear a part of a speech today on Veterans Day from President Trump. Before we do that, though, I do want to remind you of some other things that are going on. There is the Hillsborough State Attorney's Office is having a Veterans Day expungement clinic in the State Attorney's Office for the 13th Judicial Circuit. That's Tampa Hillsborough. And the Homeless Initiative and the Commission on the Status of Women are having a Hillsborough County expungement clinic. That is Tuesday, tomorrow, from 5:30 in the afternoon to 7:30 in the afternoon. And it's at the office of the state attorney, which is at 419 North Pierce Street in Tampa, 33602. You can contact Stephanie. Her email is Garza, G-A-R-Z-A underscore S, at SAO13th.com. And this is for people who want to get their records expunged. The press release says Hillsborough County is the only judicial circuit that offers this series of services at no cost to residents, saving approximately $2,500 per qualified participant. And the expungement clinic offers people who have been arrested in Hillsborough County an opportunity to have one criminal record sealed or expunged. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement administers the application process that provides several means to seal or expunge certain categories of criminal history records. That's Tuesday, tomorrow, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Office of the State Attorney, 419 North Pierce Street in Tampa. Well, today is Veterans Day, and President Trump kicked off New York City's Veterans Day tribute by saying the nation's veterans risked everything for us. Now it's our duty to serve and protect them every single day of our lives. We're going to hear a little bit of a speech by the president who spoke at the opening of the 100th annual parade organized by the United War Veterans Council in Madison Square Park. He's the first sitting president to accept the group's invitation to speak at the event. And while we're listening to this, you can call in and let us know what you think about this speech or about Veterans Day in general, or what you think about the interview that we had with the Sea Shepherd Captain Paul Watson. Trump used the event to tout the strength of the U.S. military in the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, saying al-Baghdadi is dead, his second in charge is dead, we have our eyes on number three. Trump is a lifelong New Yorker, but recently changed his official residence to Florida. He complained about his treatment by the heavily Democratic city's elected officials. So as we listen to Donald Trump, you can call in at 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885, and we'll get to your calls and emails in just a minute. Again, 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Here's President Trump speaking this morning.
Let us also show our profound appreciation to the 2019 Grand Marshals of the Parade who have served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War, and Iraq. This morning, as more than 30,000 patriotic Americans lined the streets of Manhattan, we carry on a noble tradition that began one century ago. In 1919, the people of this city filled block after block to welcome home General Pershing and his 25,000 American soldiers after victory in World War I. Just a few years before, many of those soldiers had boarded ships not far from here at Hoboken Port. More than 4 million Americans fought in the Great War, and more than 116,000 made the ultimate sacrifice. At the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, the armistice was declared. The war had come to an end, and the Allies achieved a great, great victory. Every year since, on November 11th, we have shared our nation's deepest praise and gratitude to every citizen who has worn the uniform of the American Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Marines. We are profoundly moved to have with us veterans of World War II, including one of the Grand Marshals, Woody Williams. Thank you. Thank you, Woody. Thank you very much, Woody. To each veteran of the war, the glory of your deeds will only grow greater with time. This city is graced by your presence. This nation is forever in your debt, and we thank you all. We're also pleased to be joined by veterans of the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and the War on Terror. You are the reason our hearts swell with pride, our foes tremble with fear, and our nation thrives in freedom. Would you please stand so that we can honor your heroic service, please? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all. Each year, this parade highlights one branch of our military. This year, we honor the elite masters of air, land, and sea, the legendary Leathernecks, the feared Devil Dogs, the first to flight, the United States Marines. Let's hear it. That's great. Yesterday, we celebrated the Marines' 244th birthday. That's pretty good. The few and the proud are always faithful, and they always win. I also want to thank the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, which provides scholarships to children of our fallen heroes. To every Gold Star family, we will stand by your side forever. It is very fitting that the Veterans Day Parade begin right here in New York City. Since the earliest days of our nation, New York has exemplified the American spirit and has been at the heart of our nation's story of daring and defiance. On July 2nd, 1776, the British Armada sailed into New York Harbor, numbering more than 400 ships and carrying more than 30,000 men. The British came here to snuff out what they thought was just a minor American revolution. Didn't turn out to be that way. But the Redcoats did know. What they did know was they were going to have a problem, but they didn't know that New York would meet them with the fearsome power of American patriots. In World War I, New York regiments like Harlem Hellfighters, the Lost Battalion, and the Fighting 69th were revered all over the globe. During World War II, 63 million tons of supplies and more than 3 million service members shipped out of New York Harbor. On September 11, 2001, the whole world saw the horror and responded to America's wicked enemies with unwavering courage, unbreakable spirit, and resolve that is deeper than oceans, fiercer than fires, and stronger than steel. Last week, I was honored to award the Presidential Citizens Medal to an extraordinary American, Rick Rescorla. Rick enlisted in the Army at the recruiting center in Times Square, became a Great War hero in Vietnam, and then became head of security at Morgan Stanley in the World Trade Center. On September 11th, he saved 2,700 lives before giving his own. Today, we are immensely grateful to be joined by Rick's son, Trevor. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. To Trevor and every 9/11 family, we pledge to never, ever forget. The towering spirit of strength that we see in this city lives within the heart of every American warrior. From the snow of Valley Forge to the jungles of Vietnam, from the forests of Bellawood to the beaches of Normandy, from the mountains of Afghanistan to the deserts of Iraq, that spirit has helped our fighters defeat tyrants, conquer fascism, vanquish communism, and face down terrorism. Just a few weeks ago, American Special Forces raided the ISIS compound and brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Thanks to American warriors, al-Baghdadi is dead. His second in charge is dead. We have our eyes on number three. His reign of terror is over, and our enemies are running very, very scared. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, that's President Trump speaking this morning in New York City. And what do you think about that speech? It's Veterans Day. It's also known as Remembrance Day or Armistice Day. And you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And I was going to put George on the line, but he dropped off. So call back, George, if you'd like. Let me read some emails in the meantime. Tina says, I love Sea Shepherd. Let's see what else she says. In Brooksville, she says, thank you so much for Sea Shepherd Captain Watson on Midpoint today. We are longtime fans of Sea Shepherd. A donation is in order for sure, but confess I've not kept up to date. Certainly, we will listen again to the podcast later. That's an email that came in from Tina in Brooksville. Thank you for that email. We also had George in Lakeland was going to go on the air to talk about burning fuel, but he dropped off. So hope you call back. Bob in Largo wanted to know how Sea Shepherd gets its funds. I think it's a lot of it is having people make donations, but I think, you know, they have a lot of media as well. They had a TV show for several years, and he mentioned three different movies that they're in. I don't know, you know, and I don't know much about the finances, and I should have asked more, but those are just some of the ideas. Also, we had a caller from the 813 area code who said that playing Trump's voice is sending him to, or her, I don't know, to another radio station. So thank you for that input. If you'd like to weigh in, here's the number, 813-239-9663. 9663. You can also text your information, text your comment or question to 813-433-0885 or email dj@wmnf.org. What did you think about President Trump's speech this morning on Veterans Day, or what do you think about the Sea Shepherd? Let's take our first phone call of the hour, and we have Sean in Tampa. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how are you? Very nice to talk to you this morning. What we think about that, what I think about Trump's speech this morning?
Yeah, well, what?
I think, right, that was the question, right?
That is one of the questions. Go ahead.
I think Trump knows less than nothing. I think everything he says is ridiculous. I think he has no idea what he's talking about, and he's a danger to democracy, to the Constitution, and to this country. That's what I think.
What do you think about a president speaking at a Veterans Day event? This is the first time a sitting president has spoken at the Veterans Day parade in New York City.
I think it's a great thing if he happened to be a veteran. I think it's a disgrace if he's a five-time draft dodger that lied about bone spurs. And that's what I think about that.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
All right. All right. Thanks for calling in. We love our listeners, too. Thanks to Sean in Tampa for that phone call. Here's the number to call, 813-239-9663. I want to read something that was co-written by Noam Chomsky over the weekend. And this was written on Saturday, keeping in mind some things that happened the next day. So Noam Chomsky and Vijay Prashad wrote a response to the escalation of the coup attempt by the Bolivian right-wing opposition against the democratically elected government of Evo Morales. And they said that the world is with Evo, and the hashtag was El Mundo con Evo. And this was the day before Evo stepped down. So here is the statement. I'm going to quickly read the statement. We'll go back to Karen in St. Petersburg on the phone. But here's what Vijay Prashad and Noam Chomsky wrote. In Bolivia, a coup d'etat is brewing against the elected government led by Evo Morales. Sections of the armed forces, including the police, have openly indicated that they are willing to allow fascistic militia groups to attack the presidential palace in La Paz. This is a very serious situation. Evo Morales has invited the four major parties to sit down and talk about the way forward for Bolivian democracy. He has asked for the creation of a dialogue to prevent the return to the days of military dictatorship and the rule of oligarchy. Morales has called upon the United Nations, the Organization for American States, the Vatican, and others to assist in a path away from the coup. The coup is driven by the Bolivian oligarchy, who are angered by the fourth election loss by their parties to the Movement for Socialism. The oligarchy is fully supported by the United States government, which has long been eager to remove Morales and his movement from power. For over a decade, the U.S. Embassy's Center of Operations in La Paz has articulated the fact that it has two plans. Plan A, the coup. Plan B, assassination of Morales. This is a serious breach of the U.N. Charter and of all international obligations. We stand against the coup and with the Bolivian people. We hope that they will be able to withstand what is thrown against them in the days to come. El mundo con Evo, so are we. And that is the letter signed by Noam Chomsky and Vijay Prashad on Saturday. And then yesterday, Evo Morales and several people who are in line to succeed him stepped down. So there's kind of a vacuum in power in Bolivia right now. Well, that was just something I thought I'd say. Well, we had a little bit of a lull, but now we have Karen in St. Petersburg who wants to talk about Donald Trump's speech. So welcome to the show, Karen.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad I'm a free thinker that can make my decision and listen. And to me, part of the speech, it sounds disingenuous and prompted. Looking at the leaders say, okay, hope that we can evolve to have better leaders down the road that don't think that taking other people's lives is the best thing. You know, it says when you do that, you've already lost the battle. So, you know, as I see ourselves living in the now or living in our heavens on earth now, in our eternal lives, I think that we need to really wake up to the fact that we can do better amongst ourselves and treat each other better. with more respect.
So tie that in to me with the speech and what prompted you to call about the speech. Is there something specifically that the president said that made you think about saying that?
It's just listening to him talk, you know, and I'm listening to it, and I'm listening, you know, from the heart. And, you know, to ever forget, some things, you know, we can learn from the past, but we don't have to live there. And the way people have treated people coming out of the Kali Yuga into a new golden age is really horrific. It's like society's in a mass depression and needs the work to come out of it. And it's going to take, you know, I believe that we do heal each other naturally in our own divine light. I believe that we do heal each other. And so we can wake up from some of the things that have just been very idiotic in the way that we've treated our own selves. And I believe that we can do better. It's not like it's, you know, heaven is way out there. We're on here, humans living on Earth. It's here for us to be better and develop amongst ourselves better.
All right, Karen, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you calling in. Thanks so much. And if you'd like to join this conversation, we still have about 4 minutes left. It's 813-239-9663. We do have time to get you on the air. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm your host every Monday at noon on Midpoint. And I wanted to let you know about this situation in Wildwood, Florida, where authorities say a prisoner is dead following a fight between rival gangs at a federal prison. A Federal Bureau of Prison statement says the fight occurred yesterday morning in the high security unit of the Federal Corrections Complex Coleman near Wildwood in Central Florida, just north of Tampa, really. Police Workers Union Chief Joe Rojas says tensions had escalated between a primarily African-American gang and a white supremacist gang. Rojas says a prisoner was stabbed with a homemade knife. So that's something that we're really watching here, the growing danger and violence inside of Florida's prisons and this federal prison in Florida. All right, we're going to go now to Joel in Clearwater. Joel, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that I really liked Trump's speech, and I also would have really liked it had Obama done it, or either of the Bushes, or Clinton, and on and on and on. It was just nonpartisan. He just stuck to what it was like in the military. I know he wasn't in the military. I once was. So that's really all I really wanted to say about it.
Thanks for that perspective. Can I ask you, are you someone who supports the I would vote again, so let's say, for President Trump?
Yes. Right now it is between, when I go to vote, it's going to be between Trump and Tulsi Gabbard.
If they're both running, what happens then?
Then I will vote for one or the other. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for weighing in, Joel. I appreciate that perspective. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Let me get caught up here on emails. Watson, this is an email from Suzanne, who says that Watson and his entire crew are vegans because you can't save one animal by eating others. That's a true environmentalist. So thank you for that perspective, Suzanne. Also, we have 813 says, if Trump laid the wreaths today, he wouldn't have been able to give his speech that he thinks sounds presidential. So I think this is a person criticizing President Trump for not doing one action, which is laying the wreath, I imagine, at Arlington. And let's see if we can squeeze one more person on the air before the end of the show. Hi, Kevin. What's on your mind? Kevin, are you there? All right. Thank you. Kevin, you're there now. It was my fault. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to talk about President Trump's speech. And I remember when Eisenhower made his proclamation, there was always a call to dedicate ourselves to peace. And Trump made no call for peace. And I was extremely disappointed in his speech.
Do you hear leaders calling for peace very often? I mean, it just seems like, you know, a lot of times leaders, whether they're presidents or whatever in the United States, they talk about military victories. Do you expect them to call for peace?
I want them to call for peace. And they talk about military victories, and it's always on somebody else's citizens, particularly civilians. And what that does is devalue our lives. We're suggesting that we're better than they are, which is completely false. And I would rather see the world at peace.
All right. Thanks so much, Kevin. Let's end it on that note. Thanks so much for calling in, Kevin. And to everyone who called, thank you. And if you would like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts about this show, about the Sea Shepherd Captain Paul Watson's interview or the Trump speech on Veterans Day, leave me a voicemail at 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. If you missed any of the show, you'll be able to listen to it on our website, wmnf.org/news, later on. I'll also put up a video later today of the interview I did yesterday with Paul Watson. You can join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. Thanks so much to our engineer, Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Latino 54 with guest host John Fausti, coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening on WMNF.org.